Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBurka Butler joins us once again to bring us some stories from other parts of the world. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, Italy we're going to go to first. And I don't know if this is an innovation for prison inmates.
Well, it is in Italy. Mm. I believe it's happening in other countries in Europe, but certainly this is a first for Italy. And it has opened its first ever sex room for prisoners. It went into operation on Friday when an inmate was allowed a visit from his female partner in a special facility in a town called Terni in central Umbria. A lovely little town, actually. It's not too big or anything like that. It's one of those picturesque little places. It's not the kind of thing where world events happen too yes. often. But this was quite a big deal. This comes after a ruling from a constitutional court that was given in January of 2024, I think, right? So this individual was brought by a man that we only know as Eeyore, who said that his constitutional rights had been violated around sort of gathering with his family and this kind of thing, right? Mm. And initially, it's a very interesting case because initially he said that he wanted to have a kind of a private audience with both his wife or his partner, I can't remember if he was married, but anyway, his partner and his daughter. And then this extended into a request for, you know, having
conjugal rights
yeah. with his wife or partner. And the judge agreed. And it appears that there was no sort of debate put up by the government of Italy. They went with it, but it took them a while to lay out the parameters of how the whole thing would operate, right?
Yeah.
So the same guy in Terni, he won his case and they allowed for this. And so the guidelines state that inmates would be granted intimate meetings and should have access to a room with a bed and a toilet for up to 2 hours, which I thought was fairly ambitious given that the guy's been in prison for such a long time that he'd, you know, last for 2 hours, but
yeah.
there you go.
Yeah.
That was one side. But the other thing was that that prison guards weren't allowed to observe. So normally when you have a visitor,
you'd have thought
there'd be
yeah.
people around you, but they had to keep the door unlocked in case there was a situation where prison guards needed to nip in and salvage
intervene.
A situation that was going wrong.
This kind of surprised me in a way that you would have thought that the basic principle of being incarcerated for a crime is that you don't have access to your family.
Yes.
And plus also the second one, security concerns about things being smuggled in and out.
Yeah, this was one thing that sprung to mind. Obviously, they've got checks and I think what they're saying is it doesn't apply to every kind of prisoner, but looking at what this guy was convicted for, it was aggravated burglary and attempted murder, so he's not getting released until 2026, no pun intended, until 2026, so he's been in for a while, but it struck me like that there's other aspects of this that didn't sit right with me either. You know, this kind of idea of maybe a mafioso going into prison and his wife actually trying to get away from him. And now all of a sudden pressure might come on the wife to go in and visit, inverted commas, from other members of the family. So I wonder, will it, you know, bring up other problems rather than resolving them? But for now, anyway, that's the situation. So certain prisoners will be allowed to have these visits and that's where it stands.
Yeah, but it's only in Terni at the moment, or will
yeah,
this be
I think it's
out?
Only I think it's only in Umbria, but I guess because it's a constitutional court case that's been brought to, like, everybody's rights will be affected by it. So there's a precedent there. So I guess. Hmm. Lots of people will be able to ask for it.
Right. Texas, we're going to go to now. Again, this is another curious one. Now, this is about, the state of Virginia's flag?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's actually a school district in Texas that has a problem with it, right? So this is late last year, Lamar Consolidated Independent School District. I'm only going to say that once, near Houston. It removed a section about Virginia from its online learning platform, all right? The platform is called Pebble Go Next, okay? And it was a learning platform for third to fifth graders, so from about the age of 8 to 11, okay? And they removed the whole section of it, and it came to the attention of another group, a group called the Texas Freedom to Read Project, that this section had been removed from the library. So they went and they asked for public records and, you know, when it became apparent what had happened and when they asked the school district what had happened, the school district admitted that it had taken it down because it violated the school board's local library policy banning, quote, any visual depictions or illustrations of frontal nudity. Now, I posted a picture of this on my Instagram account at theburka.butler, and you can have a look at the picture, right? So basically what it shows is a Roman goddess, okay, called Virtus, which symbolizes virtue, and she is holding a sword and she's holding something else, a trident of some sort in another hand, and she's resting her foot on a man that she has tyranny, okay?
Yeah, vanquished,
basically,
okay.
a sort of a symbol of tyranny, a man on the ground, and he's lost his crown. Now, that's been around for a very long time, right? But what this image of virtue has is a toga that has dropped off her shoulder, and she's showing her breast.
Right.
Right? So this is the thing that is the visual depiction or illustration of frontal nudity that has offended this school district so much that they've decided to take down the whole thing on the library that these kids can access about Virginia.
Right. And in Virginia itself, has this nipple led to the breakdown of society as we know it?
Not so far, but it has caused controversy in the past. There was an incident back in 2010 where the then Attorney General, a man by the name of Ken Cuccinelli, who was a very Republican and very conservative individual, he went as far as creating special lapel pins for his staff, which covered up the breast. And that led to a debate around, you know, images and sexually explicit images and what constituted sexually explicit images and so on. Mm. So it's not the first time that it's been in, it's had a bit of controversy. It's been around for a long time.
Yeah,
as well.
But you'd imagine in Virginia this flag is flying around the place.
Of course it is, yeah. So they don't have a problem with it necessarily in Virginia. This is Texas, a Texas school district that has a problem with it.
Right.
They don't have a problem with the thousands of guns that are going around the place, but
no,
a bit of
nipple.
No,
that's a completely different thing. Yeah, no, nipples are the worst. Right, France we're going to go to, or France, Algeria. So there seems to be a diplomatic spat hotting up there.
There has been a constant diplomatic spat between Algeria and France ever since the 1950s. They have a very funny relationship with each other, very much like Ireland and England in the early days of Irish independence, I think. And the amount of Algerians that live in France and the relations between them, they're very tightly knit, but yet their governments really do not like each other. And that's because they're so intertwined in their domestic politics in many respects. And this is the latest problem that has come about. So this is because of an influencer. Well, not because of him. But anyway, the story is about an influencer, a man by the name of Amir Boukarz. He's a 41-year-old TikToker. He has over a million followers on TikTok. And he's a big critic of the current president, Abdelmajid Tebboune, who's been there since 2019, right? And would be himself a bit of a tyrant, depending on your point of view, obviously, right? So this individual has been wanted by the Algerian government for a very long time. They've issued 9 warrants for his arrest. And the French, every time a warrant is issued, have said, no, we're not extraditing him. Okay, he's been in France since 2016, and he was granted political asylum in 2023.
Okay.
So you'd think everything was fine. Until last year, in April of last year, he was actually snatched or kidnapped from outside his home, just outside of Paris, by 4 people who he said were wearing police armbands. They bundled him into the back of some sort of a vehicle and they drugged him and they kept him in the back of the vehicle for 24 hours. And he was released in the middle of the night. Now, how he got out or why they released him, I don't know, but he did, and he managed to do press interviews, TV interviews and the like to describe what had gone on. So there was an investigation launched, obviously, and 3 men were arrested last Friday. And one of those was an individual who works for the Algerian consulate, or one of the many Algerian consulates that is in France, right? He works for a consulate in Paris. There's 18 of them all told throughout the country. Another indication of how intertwined the countries are together. So Algeria, not happy about that, as you can imagine. They expressed its displeasure at the consular official being arrested, and they said it was done in public without any notification via diplomatic channels, for obvious reasons, I would imagine. Mm. So they responded to what had been done by dismissing 12 diplomatic representatives from the French embassy in Algiers, and the French have responded in kind, and they've also called their ambassador back to have what they're calling consultations. So the relations between the two countries are at a very low ebb at the moment, and there's been other things in the past that in the past year or so that haven't gone down well between the two. So they're at loggerheads.
Yeah, and the whole thing about Western Sahara, which has been going on for donkey's years, is that part of this too?
Yeah, so that was an interesting one. So that was back in July of last year. So the French, along with a lot of other countries, including the United States and Israel, have kind of now recognised Morocco's claim to Western Sahara. It is effectively part of Morocco. But also they have decided to go in now behind this proposal that Morocco came up with back in 2007 to allow Western Sahara have some autonomy or a degree of autonomy, bit again to go back to the Irish analogy, a bit like the Free State situation. But there's people within Western Sahara, the Polisario Front, who've been fighting for independence since the 1970s, 1975 in fact, who are not happy about that. Mm. But it seems to be that more and more countries are on board with it, and that is the route that they're going down. The Polisario Front are bankrolled and supported by Algeria.
Right.
So they're not happy that their sort of neighbour or their rival in the region is being given so much support.
Okay, well,
complicated.
Yeah, isn't it always? Gambia we're going to go to next. Though this part of the story took place in a court in the United States.
Yes. So you remember our old friend Yahya Jammeh, who was president of the Gambia, a very small country. I think there's less than 2 million people live there. But he was in power from 1994 until 2016. He was a lunatic. This was the guy who thought he'd come up with a cure for HIV from herbs, and loads of people died as a result. But anyway, he held on to power mainly by hiring thugs to look after his political opponents. And there was a particular unit who were known as the Junglers. And this individual, a man by the name of Michael Sang Correa, was allegedly, although now it's been proven, a member of the Junglers. And he moved to the United States in 2016. His visa ran out after 3 years. And while they were pretty much trying to get him out of the country, they discovered, you know, that he had been involved with Yahya Jammeh and had worked for him. So the Department of Justice launched an investigation, and a year after he was detained, they charged him with conspiracy to commit torture. Okay, so this case ran last week in Denver for a week, I think it happened. And the jury came back and they convicted him. Right now, what's interesting about it is that this law, which was brought in, the law that he was prosecuted under was brought in 1994, and only two people previously had been prosecuted under it. That is, people who torture, who commit torture abroad can be prosecuted under this law. He was the first non-American to be convicted under that law. Okay,
right.
So this
okay.
sets a bit of a precedent here. So he could be sentenced to 100 years in prison. There was five counts of torture against him, and one conspiracy of to commit torture. So I think actually 100 or 120 years he could be sent to prison for. So it'd be interesting to see what sentence he's given.
Did he deny the charges, or what was his attitude in court?
Interesting. The defence that he put up was he didn't deny it, but he said that the Junglers lived in constant fear, and that the prosecutors at the trial said they... that he was under pressure to commit these crimes. Now, the jurors pointed out, the prosecution pointed out that other members of the Junglers had refused to carry out torture. Mm. And so he said there was others there who, you know, had set an example and you could have said no. Now, what happened to those that refused, I don't know.
Yes,
that's
indeed,
the other thing. So that was his defence. It didn't hold up and the jury found him guilty.
Yeah, okay, yes. It kind of relates to a piece we were doing earlier on about I was only following orders, that kind of logic. The UK we're going to go to finally, and I suppose this perhaps relates to the Netflix show Adolescence and all those kind of things. It's a survey about attitudes towards female teachers.
Yeah, that was really the reason I brought it up.
Yeah.
First of all, I suppose I'll ask you, have you seen it?
I have seen it, yes.
Yes, I've seen it too as well. Yeah, okay. And it's certainly worth the watch just from a drama point of view, I think. Whether or not kids will learn anything from it, I don't know. But
I don't think it's aimed at kids, actually.
I have known a lot of people, because my son is 12 now, so I've heard of a lot of parents who are actually watching it with their kids and that kind of thing, which is quite an interesting phenomenon.
Well, somebody I know who works in kind of this area with children says it's not aimed at kids at all. Kids already know this. Adults you should show this to.
And
it's more about the effect it has on the family. But that's, we've wandered into TV criticism
haven't we? Yes, absolutely. So back to the story.
Yes.
Sorry. So this is a poll, a survey that was done by the National Association of Schoolmasters and Union of Women Teachers. It was done ahead of their conference that was held in Liverpool last week. And there was over 5,800 teachers who were polled, and 59% of them said they believe that social media use has contributed to a deterioration in pupils' behaviour. I was surprised it's so low, actually. I would have thought that it would have been over 60% or well over it. But some of the feedback that was given in relation to the survey was interesting. A number of people referenced Andrew Tate, and said that he was having a negative influence on male pupils. One teacher said that she'd had 10-year-old boys who refused to speak to her because she is a woman. Another teacher said that the Andrew Tate phenomenon had a huge impact on how pupils interacted with females and males they did not see as masculine. And then there was other reports of, you know, young boys blocking the doors of female teachers and generally blocking doors to female teachers coming in and out of classrooms and generally just intimidating them. And they've seen an uptick in this. So obviously at the conference they were calling for something to be done on it, but what can be done on it is hard to know.
Yeah. Mobile phones at school in the UK, have they bought a load of bags?
I don't know what to do. I think the Conservatives are calling for a ban on schools or on phones in schools. I don't know if they've gone down the bag route or whatever they're doing point.
But so far, they can still bring them into school with them.
I think so, I'm open to correction on that, but I think so, yeah.
Yeah, for whatever difference that will make, really, because, of course, they have access to it outside of school as well. Right, so what things should we look out for over the next week?
Yeah, a few things coming up. So tomorrow, the sentencing of the man who attempted to murder Salman Rushdie and left him very badly injured. That's tomorrow. And then tomorrow is also the 20th anniversary of the first YouTube clip being posted, would you believe? Friday, the world's first sperm racing competition is going to happen in Los Angeles. And if there is not an item on this show about that in the next week or two, I don't know, something is wrong in the world. And then the day after that, probably the most disappointing result of a sperm race victory, Donald Trump will host the White House Correspondents Association dinner, which is, of course, was the famous dinner that Barack Obama gave that speech at, slagging off Donald Trump, and some say made him run for the presidency. So it'd be interesting to see what he comes up with.
It'd be very interesting to see, is he funny or not? Jonathan, thanks a million as ever. Sure. Jonathan de Burke, a butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.